The Rockford Symphony Orchestra Music Director finalist season continues this Saturday, September 24th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Welcome. I'm Margot Stedman, Education and Community Engagement Director for the Rockford Symphony Orchestra and your podcast host for today. Joining me is Music Director finalist Radu Papanyu, who will be presenting New Horizons this Saturday. Welcome to Rockford.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here, and thank you for the invitation to chat this morning.
Thanks. Let's begin by hearing something about you, where you're from, what you've been doing in the musical world, your conducting, anything you'd like to share with our audiences just to get to know you a little bit better.
Perfect. So I grew up in Romania in a town southwest, which was on the Danube, and it's a very beautiful place. On the other side, you can see Serbia, and that's where I started to play the violin when I was 7 years old. I actually really wanted to play guitar, and my grandmother bought me a guitar for my birthday, and a lot of music teachers were saying, well, the guitar is just a little bit too big, so he should start with another string instrument, and they thought the violin would be a great match, and I started playing it. I really enjoyed it immediately, but I also like to do other things, to play soccer and tennis. And little by little, I started doing some competitions. I enjoyed that very much, too. And I don't even know when it happened that I really started to love it. And my family did a huge sacrifice when I was at the end of the sixth grade. They moved me to Bucharest to attend, that's the capital of Romania, to attend a prestigious music high school there. It was called the Georgianescu Music High School. And my grandmother, the one that bought the guitar, actually moved with me there to take care of me, to cook.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I still have moments when I think about walking home when I imagine the pizza being in the oven when I get home. In any case, I went to the high school in Bucharest for 6 years. I basically finished high school in Bucharest, and a couple of things happened while I was in high school. I participated in a European youth orchestra. It was called the Central European Youth Orchestra, and that's how I truly fell in love with symphonic music. I remember playing Scheherazade, Beethoven 5 for the first time, and absolutely loving it. The way this worked, we would meet for 2 weeks over the summer in a location somewhere in Europe. We would rehearse, and it would be students from all over the European countries that were part of the Central European Initiative. And then we would travel for another 2 weeks and play concerts in a lot of different spaces. So I absolutely loved it. And then the way I first came to the United States, when I was in 11th grade, I remember this very, very well. It was during winter break. My mom was doing a lot of research online about summer camps and programs, and she ran about this summer music school. It was called the Perlman Music Program on Shelter Island, New York, and it's at Perlman's, the violinist, his summer music school. And we sent an application in. To my big surprise, I was accepted, and I spent the next 2 summers on Shelter Island, New York.
Wow.
Which I absolutely loved, and after that I really wanted to study in the United States. So I ended up, I'll do the spark notes really, really quickly. I ended up at the Colburn Conservatory in Los Angeles for 7 years. I did 2 degrees in violin performance there, a bachelor's of music and an artist diploma. While studying violin, I started to conduct as well, and I loved it. And the two developed together for a while. And then after the years in LA, I did a master of music in orchestral conducting in Boston at the New England Conservatory. And right after that, I started a job with the Naples Philharmonic, and I've been with them for 5 years. I'm now associate conductor of the Naples Philharmonic and music director of the Youth Orchestra, and I was recently appointed music director of the Southwest Florida Symphony, which is in Fort Myers, not too far from Naples, actually.
Yeah, I'm actually originally from Florida, so
wonderful.
Yes, congratulations on those appointments. That's exciting.
Thank you so much.
So do you still play violin, or are you focused primarily on conducting now?
I would say professionally, it is 100% conducting. But that being said, because of the pandemic, there's been a lot more time.
A silver lining.
A silver lining. And I had a few projects that were very dear to me. I recorded an album, which is now being edited in Boston last year, in March, at the radio studios there. And it will come out soon on the online platforms on Spotify and iTunes.
Wow.
And it was some really fun repertoire that was very meaningful to me.
Yeah.
We did a Bartok Sonata, a piece by Vecsi, who's a Hungarian violinist that almost nobody knows. He's not a well-known name, but he was a prodigy at some point and wrote some very, very beautiful violin music. A little song by Dvorak. It's just music that I truly love to play. And we did also perform a recital around the recording at MIT in Boston. And we're repeating the recital in Florida this year. And I teach a little bit of violin on the side as well, which has been bringing me a lot of joy.
That's really great. And the idea that as a conductor, you're also still a practicing musician, I'm sure that complements each other well when you're in front of the orchestra.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, it's been such an important part of my life for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. When I don't do it for a really long time, I just really, really miss it. And it's really interesting, but I always list as my hobbies. And it's just absolutely true. I say that I love playing tennis, fishing, biking, and hosting chamber music reading parties. This idea that everybody gets together and we have food, share a drink, and we just read string quartets. That to me is an ideal evening.
That sounds amazing. So let's move on a little bit more to the music director. To the role of the music director. We know that music directors plan concerts, they conduct the orchestra, but for you, what other facets of being a music director are important to the organization and to how the symphony relates to the community?
That's a very, very good question. And I think it was already becoming essential, but I think particularly as we're coming out of the COVID pandemic, it's absolutely essential that the music director has a voice in the community. And it's truly an ambassador for the orchestra. I think the times when the conductor would just come in, conduct, and do the music parts, of course, that's very, very, very important. But I think as a music director, it's absolutely essential to just be present in the community as much as possible. And not just musically. I'm envisioning, of course, participating in events, but also being a teacher in a way, mm-hmm. not just of music, but also of the concert-going experience, mm-hmm. presenting lecture, talking, truly educating audiences. We know why music is so incredible. And lots of audiences know, too, but I think if we find the right way to invite mm-hmm. new mm-hmm. people, other people in, too, I think, to me, that is where the secret is moving forward. Because we have the most wonderful creations, these pieces mm-hmm. of music mm-hmm. that we have seen on our planet, and we just have to make them accessible for everybody.
And I'm always surprised when I talk with people that have been patrons for years, or even my mother that has gone to every concert I've ever been in and volunteers, and you know, they say, well, I don't know that much about music. And it's like, by default, you do. You've been to every concert for 20 years, but there's always a barrier in feeling confident in expressing opinions in classical music or what you like or don't like. And it's hard. It's a hard nut to crack.
It is very hard. But at the same time, what I like to tell everybody, and it's really what spoke to me in the beginning. That's why I wanted to do music. After all is said and done, there's only one rule. If it speaks to you, if it moves you in some way, then that's it. You're absolutely getting it.
It's good.
Yeah. And the more you'll become familiar with it, you'll start recognizing this thing, and you'll start observing things about the form of the pieces and the styles. And that is all wonderful. But if it speaks to you, you're already 100% understanding it.
I love that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the program that you're going to be doing with us, New Horizons. Tell us a little bit about why you chose this particular program, the pieces that are on it. We can go through the pieces a little bit individually, but what moved you about putting this program together?
Well, I was when I was talking I think I was having one of my first interviews with the music director search committee. I was so impressed at how the orchestra was interested in looking, what can we do that's different? Can we, perhaps, you know, we've always been doing the masterworks and then the pop series. Is there a way to break the boundaries a little bit? And I found that concept just absolutely fascinating. And that's how this program came about. It has the title New Horizon. And the inspiration for that came a little bit to me. If we look at the first piece of Caroline Shaw's piece, Entrucked, this really, the idea behind it is a little bit this concept at looking at something in a normal way. It's right there in front of you. And then looking at it through a glass. Mm-hmm. And the image can change completely. It can be either distorted a little bit. But what I'm really trying to say is that you can look at things from many different angles and with new perspectives. And that when you look at the other pieces on the program, you will notice there's a lot of folk influence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And both with Ravel's Tzigan and Csárdás, I heard that kind of music being from Romania growing up all the time. There is a huge tradition. I actually, Csárdás is probably the most popular violin Hungarian tune. Hungary is a neighbor to Romania. Sure. I played it as a kid probably, I mean, at least 50 times in all sorts of public gatherings. And also with Dvořák Symphony, it's so much based on Bohemian folk music, and there's a huge connection between Bohemian, and then we have the folk tradition in Hungary. And then that's where Charles Yang and his arrangements come in. He takes the Csárdás, and you'll see in the middle of it, we're going to go in a completely different direction. And we're going to do the same thing with the other two pieces of on the program. And I think I have found it to be a most natural way to break the boundaries, and I cannot wait to share these arrangements with the public here in Rockford.
Well, I've been watching videos of Charles Yang, and he's just so energetic and just draws you in. And the arrangements, online, it's just piano and violin, so I can't wait to hear the orchestrations of them. I think there's so much there that if people are just thinking this is a regular orchestra concert, they're missing out on the energy he's going to bring. Talk a little bit about him.
Oh, yeah. So the program is definitely going to take a turn at some point. But I promise you, it will be a really, really, really fun and interesting and fresh turn. Now, this is truly what happened. We were towards the beginning of the pandemic. And I think the pandemic has been a very difficult time for a lot of people, but also for a lot of musicians. And I think we have all gone through a lot of different psychological phases. It was very hard because we had the uncertainty on when are we going to go back to work? Are we going to go back to work? And what truly happened, a lot of us started putting a lot of content online, and there was almost a saturation a couple months into the pandemic with so much music performed from home. And I have to confess myself, I was finding that I was swiping through the videos really quite fast, which I'm not proud of, but it's the new way of technology. There's so much coming at you that, you know, you spend 10 seconds here, 20 seconds here. But then this concert, it was presented by the violin channel.
Yes.
Online came up, and it was Charles Yang and Peter Dugan.
Yes,
on the piano.
I watched it.
And I happened to know both a little bit before. I have met them before. But I started watching, and what happened, I just froze in front of the in the screen. I just couldn't stop watching. And it was really, I think, the first time that happened to me around that time.
Yes.
In the pandemic. And I was thinking, I spent 9 years in conservatories, and I heard this phrase a lot, especially if you're taking some sort of career development class. You got to think outside the box. You got to come up with something. You invent your way to make a career today in music. And I thought that's a wonderful thing to hear, but how do we do that? It was very hard to come up with a solution. And while watching what they were doing, I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I thought, how come it hasn't been done quite like this before? And I ended up, a few days later, I just wrote to Charles immediately, and I said, are these orchestrated? Can we do them on a program? And it was around the same time that we were talking with Rockford about programming a concert here. So it just worked out perfectly. Yeah. And I cannot wait to just do it in person.
Yeah. And I think for anyone listening, I think sometimes it's scary to hear like new or different, or, but I mean, I completely agree. I saw that concert, and it's just, it's beautiful. I mean, it just washes over you, and it's, but it is fresh. It's these kind of variations on things, but the beauty isn't lost. It's not difficult to listen to. It's very, just, you just think, yes, why hasn't someone else done this?
Exactly. And it is exactly what you're saying. It's extraordinarily fresh. And we are constantly going between different musical styles. But it is all done at the highest possible artistic level, which is it's just fascinating. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So moving on to the last piece on the program, which we touched on a little bit, is the Dvorak Symphony. It's a warhorse piece for the full orchestra. We just heard a symphony last month from Dvorak's mentor Brahms. And so what do you love about this symphony, and what should audience members be listening for when they come to the concert, when they get to the symphony?
Dvorak, it's just an absolutely wonderful symphony. Also, it's one of the most optimistic pieces that Dvorak ever wrote. And I think where we are in time, to me, it's important that we're doing something like that, too. It has a very optimistic message. It is true. Dvorak and Brahms enjoyed a very, very special relationship. Brahms helped Dvorak a lot in the beginning of his career. But after that, it really developed into a friendship that lasted truly their entire life. Let's go a step backwards. When Dvorak wrote his Seventh Symphony, the reason he wanted to write his Seventh, it was because he was so inspired by Brahms' Third Symphony. Now, the Seventh has a slightly darker mood at times, and it is a little bit of a political message. In the Seventh, Dvorak was so moved when he was, he has a fascination with trains. He would sit at the train station and watch trains for hours.
He did not know that.
Loved looking at them and how they would come in. But what happened on this particular day, people were coming from all over Czech Republic to the capital for an event that was happening. It was a musical event that was happening in order to support Czech struggles against oppression. And that truly, truly inspired him. So in a way, Beethoven, Dvorak Seventh was a political statement. Now, Brahms, after the Seventh Symphony, advised Dvorak, I think you should go back more to the folk themes that everybody has loved so much in the Slavonic dances.
Isn't it interesting how history repeats itself? It's always the same. You know, they say, go back to what people loved.
Well, the truth is, people love Dvorak's Seventh Symphony as well. But Brahms advised him to write a very optimistic piece of music. And he was, the Slavonic dances before became
huge,
a sensation. I mean, they sold like hot bread.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Dvorak did in the Eighth Symphony. All the motives are really based on Bohemian folk music, which he adored.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting enough, the first thing you hear in the first movement is this wonderful melody in the lower strings in the cello, and it is a bit, the mood is not quite happy immediately. I wouldn't necessarily call it sad, but it has this wonderful melancholic feeling, and then it all gets interrupted. There's this bird call in the flute, and the sun comes out, and very, very happy, uplifting music that is occasionally interrupted by darker moments. But these darker moments, really, it seems that they're there only to make the celebration at the end more powerful. And this is something that it seems that Dvorak was gaining this incredible maturity in this composition, that he understood the idea of contrast and how to use contrast in order to achieve the goal that he truly wanted in the end. I want to tell you a couple more things. In
yes.
the second movement, this is very important. There are a couple, speaking of the more dramatic moments mm-hmm. in the symphony, there are a couple almost Wagnerian moments. And they are not random. Dvorak was very much a fan of Wagner's music. And as a matter of fact, when Wagner visited Czech Republic, Dvorak played viola in the orchestra when Wagner conducted. So you'll notice there are moments they get a little bit more chromatic, and it's this utter romanticism in a dramatic way. They're unmistakable in the second movement. The third movement, if we were to compare it, it's not as much of a, let's say, Beethoven scherzo third movement. It's more of a Brahms mm-hmm. intermezzo-like or Schumann intermezzo-like kind of feeling. So one more time, we see this incredible mm-hmm. influence of Brahms. And then the last movement begins with trumpets. It's a little bit of a fanfare. And usually, you know, trumpets have been used for many, many purposes in music. It could be a call to battle, to mm-hmm. war, or it could be, let's see, a royal kind of gathering. But that is this, it's a very famous line that the conductor, Rafael Kubelik, said in one rehearsal. I want to quote him because I just think it touches right on the point of what the fourth movement is about. He said, in Dvorak's music, even the trumpets call to dance.
Oh,
and we
launch nice.
Into this wonderful dance-like movement, but it's really in the format of a theme and a variation.
Nice. Well, I think you've given a great introduction. I hope everyone will be at the concert and listen to it beforehand, maybe to get some of those things in their head so that when they come, they can appreciate even more what's happening on stage. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we sign off?
No, thank you so much. And I cannot wait to share all this music with everyone here in Rockford. I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. Tickets are still available for this concert, New Horizons. It happens this Saturday, September 24th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. For tickets and more information, you can go to our website, rockfordsymphony.com, or call us at 815-965-0049. Again, this is Margot Stedman, and thank you for listening.